Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that was up late last night doing karaoke and singing Creed. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and my voice is raspy, but my arms are wide open.
Were you participating with, was Travis Jankowski involved? Like, were there any Rangers people there? Was it Rangers media? Who was really promoting the Creed sing-along in Phoenix last night?
The guy you're on the Zoom with talking to right now.
Okay. You were the Creed leader is what I'm hearing.
Yes, I was the Creed leader.
Okay. So as Jake recovers from his karaoke, we will move right into this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Game three tonight, Max Scherzer, Brandon Pfaadt. We are back at Chase Field. You are back at Chase Field anyway. I'm still in the same seat that I've been all month. But Jake, I'm excited for this game. I will say that as far as postseason off days go, yesterday felt like one where I was itching to watch a World Series game, and it wasn't there. I know with the travel day, it's a necessity. I totally understand that. I did watch a little bit of Dominican Winter League. There were some good games last night, but it did feel a little empty. The series has me very excited with it being very tied up. But as we left off with the Game 2 recap, I was so excited for Game 3, and that did not happen yesterday. So I'm itching. Let's get this game going tonight.
They should make the players who are not on the rosters for both teams do live at-bats on the off day. Mm-hmm. So I can watch, you know, Bryce Jarvis
face... Wait, who are the Rangers guys that are definitely not playing? I feel like I've gotten to see a lot of the D-backs taxi squad. I've seen Sergio Alcantara. I've seen, I heard like Jorge Barroza. I mean, they've really brought in like the whole 40-man seems to be involved in this D-backs taxi squad. Who are some Rangers guys that we have not thought about that are on the taxi squad that you've seen around?
Well, I don't know if they're on the taxi squad, but Ian Kennedy is incredibly around.
Okay. That's a good one. Has he pitched? Now, later on in this show, we have a great email about, you know, who's going to get a ring. We've made all the jokes about Madison Bumgarner. But, you know, if we are just keeping it really loose of guys that have appeared for either of these teams this year, there are definitely some players that we should talk about. But we'll save that for later on. But Ian Kennedy's a good one. I have seen him in the dugout during games.
Ezekiel Duran is obviously around. And then Brad Miller.
Oh, who was on yes.
60 yes. day.
Okay. Brad Miller. Yeah. Yeah. 67 plate appearances. All right. So good for Brad Miller.
Brad Miller versus Bryce Jarvis on the off day at Chase Field, live at bats, stream it live on MLB Network 2 plus whatever. Just give me something to nibble on because right.
I would love it. And you can pipe in the crowd noise, right? We still have that audio from the COVID season. Like, make it happen. I'm in. All right, Jake, on this episode of Baseball Overcast, we are going to, you know, just kind of bounce around some thoughts we have going in to Game 3, some things that we've learned since our Game 2 recap, many of them Tommy Pham related. And then we're just going to kind of go through some of the things we learned during the off-day press conferences because those are, while, you know, you often, if you're on Twitter, you only see a fraction of them. But there's a lot of interactions that goes on during these. And if you know, have access to the full transcripts, there's some interesting things that goes on there. So, and then we're going to hit you with a couple emails. Again, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We'll read some of those and then we will leave so that we can go focus on getting ready for Game 3. But Jake, where would you like to begin this episode? What would you like to, what are you thinking about as this game approaches?
I'm thinking about Tommy Pham, knowing that he's a dump truck.
Yeah, that's Mike Maddux made that clear to everybody. So you want to remind everyone what you're talking about?
For those of you who missed it, Tommy Pham picked off second base in the fifth or sixth inning. Sorry, it's been a long couple days. And by a mile, not even close, just totally nailed. And as he's sliding back into second base, they tag him out. The camera cuts to the dugout, where pitching coach Mike Maddux of the Texas Rangers says, attaboy, which is apparently what everyone loves saying now, attaboy, you dumb fuck. Mm-hmm. We bantered about whether or not Pham knew about this. It appeared that he did not, and it now appears that he does as he responded to a tweet about it on X, Twitter, whatever the heck. Just like the little emoji of a pen on paper. But Tommy Pham is aware.
Tommy Pham been taking notes for a long time, which is, I think, what this emoji is making clear. Now, I don't know what that, you know, again, this is within a game where he went 4-for-4 and was clearly one of the heroes of the game. It's not like there's any sort of additional revenge that needs to happen. But I'm curious about this because let's talk about the Pham response here, which is the taking notes. How does Tommy Pham plan to get back at Mike Maddox for this comment? Because, okay, oh, he's going to slap him. Okay, yeah, all right, we can move on from that. Well, how can Tommy Pham realistically get back at him? I think the obvious one is Mike Maddox goes out for a mound visit.
No, he just has to force a lot of mound visits by hitting home runs.
Okay, well, either forcing mound visits or mound visit before Tommy Pham is batting, Tommy Pham homers, Tommy Pham is, Tommy Pham, as he's crossing home plate, looks back towards the Rangers dugout and goes, "You dumb fuck." That would be, I think, the perfect sequence. But is there any other scenario you could come up with?
Staring him down is good. The other thing with these two, like, they're both from Vegas. So it seems that they do know each other. Mm-hmm. There is some sort of relationship there prior.
You think
I thought I do. Whether it's good or bad. Like, baseball people who live in the same city in the big leagues tend to have been around one another at some point, and he played for the Cardinals when Maddox was the pitching coach, I believe. So there is some sort of link here. Mm-hmm. A Tommy Pham home run and staring down Mike Maddox, it's basically the Harper Arcia thing all over again, Jordan.
Yeah, I will say, though, it was a great reminder of, not that we need to go back to the Arcia thing, but truly, like, when players mess up, you know, the Arcia thing was in a clubhouse with media, but like, players in the dugout and apparently coaches too, when the other team fucks up, this is happening all the time. Now, we don't always get it in perfect slow motion because, as with the Arcia thing, when it's the World Series, there are more cameras on more people during the game as well. But for the most part, in regular season games between the Royals and White Sox, if someone fucks up, most of the dugout is laughing and saying, "You dumb fuck too." That happens all the time. But yep. In this case, it's a little bit different. And that is why we get the slow-mo shot of Mike Maddox, which is quite entertaining. But also, I guess that's true. I guess they would have been with the Cardinals at the same time, which is kind of interesting.
It's important to really separate, you know, Tommy Pham's actions from Tommy Pham the person. You know, if Mike Maddox had said, "That's a dumb fuck move," I'm sure Tommy Pham would have said yes. But it's the ad hominem attack on Tommy Pham that I'm sure he will keep in his ledger for future purposes.
I agree. Now, the other thing we learned about Tommy Pham since we last spoke is that it was his idea to pinch hit Jace Peterson late in the game. He apparently went to manager Torey Lovello and said, "Hey, you need to get my boy an AB in the World Series." Now, this brings up a whole other thing. This is just like Tommy Pham and Jace Peterson, who've been teammates for 2 months, unless I'm forgetting about another time they were teammates. They're boys, and that's Tommy Pham being an all-time teammate. But it is an amazing thing. He's like, "You know what? No, I don't need a fifth hit." Now, apparently, Torey Lovello was like, "Listen, dude, like, we need to be up by a certain amount of runs," which they clearly were, so it worked out. But this is really, I mean, as cliche as it is, and everyone's going to be like, "Wow, you know, amazing moment, blah, blah, blah." But no, I mean, it's truly an incredibly, not even just selfless, but just a unique situation to have in any game, let alone a World Series game, where you're up by enough where Tommy Pham's like, hey, Jace Peterson's going to hit for me.
Tommy Pham creating a make-a-wish moment for his buddy. It's very sweet.
Will Jace Peterson hit again in this World Series? That's the other way. That's honestly the other way I'm taking it, is Tommy Pham's like, "I don't think Jace Peterson's getting in this game in this series otherwise, so let me do him a solid and have him go pinch hit for me while we're up by 8. Totally fair. You know, and Jace Peterson is another guy who's been around a long time. Not quite as long as Tommy Pham, but someone that I'm sure appreciated that. Both of those guys have been on like 7 teams.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for him it was cool.
Jace Peterson, "Gee whiz, thanks, Tommy."
Thanks, Tommy Pham.
Appreciated, Tommy Pham. That's so sweet of you.
The question is, can he do this for Jose Herrera too? Again, no, a little bit more complicated for the catcher.
Yeah, but you can't do that with the catcher.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the Rangers equivalent of this? Is, I guess, maybe the real question.
We already saw it. Hedges, it was Austin hit. Hedges. Yeah.
We already saw Hedges. So I don't know what the other version of it is, right? I guess it's like Semien being like, hey, I guess Robbie Grossman, right? But we saw Robbie Grossman briefly in this last game and he struck out. So we're probably done with Robbie Grossman.
Yeah, there's no charity case situation. It appears in the Rangers roster. I'm going to be honest with you. I did not know Jace Peterson was on the active roster because he was not on the active roster last round.
Yes.
And so I just, when I saw him coming up to pinch hit, that was when I knew he was on the roster.
So Lovello had a quote going into the series where it was like, he was like, yeah, during the NLCS, I kept, you know, looking down and I felt like I was a hitter short. And so apparently that hitter was Jace Peterson, and apparently this was the only time that they were going to use him, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there will be a closer game that goes longer. Again, we just saw an extra innings game in game one. Like, maybe it's possible. But they put him on for Ciccone, I believe. So maybe it would be a Jankowski situation would be where we could see.
That happens to me all the time, Jordan. I'll just be rolling around life, and I'll just, you know, I'm a little hitter short, and I need Jace Peterson to step up in my life.
Rob Manfred's like, oh, great. So we can do a smaller pitcher limit. Like, we need more hitters, not more pitchers. He's like, you admit it. You admit it, Torey Lovello. You have too many pitchers.
The Diamondbacks are modern baseball, Jordan. Come on now. Yeah. Run and gun.
Think about it this way. This is Rob Manfred's argument. If the Diamondbacks in that series felt like he had too many pitchers, then everybody has too many pitchers, you know? Like, that should be the conclusion there. That, like, actually, no, you don't need this many. Have Jace Peterson on your roster so that we can have this heartfelt moment.
Really
anyway,
cute.
That's the Tommy Pham update. What's another thing you were thinking about ahead of Game 3?
I just want to talk about Corbin Carroll for a second. What have your impressions been of Corbin Carroll in the spotlight? Because he is both the best player on the Diamondbacks and a child. He is both of those things. He has not, like, shined in the spotlight this October. He has not turtled either. He has been perfectly fine. How have your opinions and the way you think about Corbin Carroll changed at all in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think with what he did in Game 7 was that qualifies as shining in the spotlight, and we've seen him kind of deliver some big hits. I know they ended up losing Game 1, but, you know, that triple was a real moment. The thing I've been thinking about with him is more big picture, the way that we've talked about, you know, Adley Rutschman, right? And thinking about the way that these rookies can kind of not just be good individually immediately, but kind of instill a sense for the entire team where it's like, yeah, what's the problem? Like, we have Corbin Carroll, you know, with Corbin Carroll, anything is possible. Basically, is kind of the sense that I'm getting. Even if he's now, it's a little bit different. He's playing right field. He's not catcher. When we talk about Adley, you know, he can control so many parts of the game as the catcher, but I still feel like that same level of confidence that Carroll has brought because he is capable of so much in so many different ways that the rest of the team, including so many of the other young guys, are just like, yeah, screw it. Why not? Why can't we win? We have Corbin Carroll.
It's like, the food's here. Let's eat.
Yeah. I don't know.
Corbin Carroll is the food.
And same thing with Adley, right? It's like, oh, you lost a billion games before I was here. Like, that means nothing to me. Like, I'm here, and so we're going to win now. Now, I know they haven't won to the same degree as the Orioles with Adley, but it's still the same sense once they've gotten into the postseason where he, as you've referred to with Adley, he legitimizes the whole operation, I think is the good way. We talk about that sometime with free agency. We've talked about it with the Rangers, you know, when they signed Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, legitimizing their efforts to win. I think Corbin Carroll has done that by himself too.
I've really appreciated him more as a physical thing. It is one of the most unique athletes we've had in baseball. Mm-hmm. He is very short and very compact. I guess the way I would describe him physically is dense. Like, he is so freaking ripped. Like, he's cut and it is all very, like, condensed. Like, he's just, there's no bonus Corbin Carroll
But it is interesting comparing, because he's, what is he? Is he listed at 5'10 or 5'11?
5'10.
5'10. So he's listed at 165, which that feels, you trust the height, very rarely trust the weight. Now you can't really get away with lying about your height anymore. But in general, that's one that where, when we think about short players, there is a huge difference between 5'10 and 5'7, but he looks short. Like, he looks short for a major leaguer. And so how would you compare his body type compared to, like, obviously Altuve is as small as it gets, but even like a Mookie. You know, Mookie, I think, is listed at 5'8", 5'9". And, like, it's different. It's something about the way that he swings and his stance and the lefty versus righty. But all the small players in baseball kind of bring a slightly different physique, it feels like.
Mookie is so much more quick twitch than Corbin.
Interesting.
Corbin is a 6'4 slugger and a 5'9 guy's body. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about how does this guy generate so much power, I felt that too. And then I was standing next to him and it was like, yeah. Like, this is, this guy's yoked. Like, it's not that complicated.
Corbin Carroll also runs very funny.
Yes.
He's very fast, obviously. But there's something about his strides that are not as, like, I don't know. There's some, I got so used to watching Ellie De La Cruz all year, and because he had obviously had these huge strides, but was also so coordinated, it was just like the most graceful athletic feat you could fathom. Whereas Carroll, it's like almost like smaller strides, and it like looks like sped up, but it also looks kind of goofy, almost like cartoonish, the way that he's moving around the bases.
He's like Roadrunner.
Obviously, he's flying. Yeah, right. It feels like it needs to come with sound effects in a way that some of the other fastest players do not look.
Speaking of walking or running differently, now is the time to talk about Bruce Bochy and his gait.
Yeah.
You texted me this. Why does Bruce Bochy walk like that? It has been a topic of discussion in the press box many times. I asked some Texas Rangers people yesterday. So Bochy got a number of lower body surgeries during his time away from the game, but it has left him with a real hobble, a very unique walk. And we were debating this last night. Why does he have to walk out there to make the pitching changes? He's clearly uncomfortable. He's clearly in pain, clearly not walking well. Why can't we just send somebody else out there to make the pitching changes, or can he just do them from the dugout? Why are we sending the manager out there at all?
So this is great, because while we could talk for 10 minutes about Bruce Bochy's gait, like, I do think the concept of who has to make the pitching change is an interesting one when you see it at different levels of baseball. You know this, or maybe some people don't know this, but in college baseball, there are some managers that are never the ones that make the pitching change. Some programs, it is always the pitching coach. Right now, what comes with that, I think what we have in Major League Baseball is, then you think about the opposite, which is, how often does the manager come out and not make a pitching change, right? That's when in the big leagues, you feel like, oh shit, like, something really weird is going down, or we're really, you know, planning the defense, or all kinds of different things like that. But to your first question, why does it have to be him? I don't think it does, right? I don't think there's a rule. Now, you do have to signal. That's the one thing that has to happen. And I think what you're asking is, can he point from the comfort of his seat? And I feel like probably, but I don't know. It feels like we have to look in the rule book.
He just has to walk over the line. He doesn't need to walk all the way. He just walks over the baseline, points, turns around. They handle it themselves.
Yeah.
Making a pitching change as a youth baseball coach is really one of the most powerful feelings you can have.
Yes.
In the world. In the entire world. If you've never done it, I recommend it. Go coach a little league team just so you can feel that much power.
So you can pull someone.
Pointing.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the experience of pointing to your first baseman or your left fielder is a little bit different than pointing to the bullpen and signaling for a reliever to come in. Because then what you have, usually, like, you have to be like, all right, so you come to pitch, you go to first, you're going to move to third. I need the catcher to change. Like, you're just doing so much other stuff. But then, you know, doing a mound visit to talk to your pitcher is always great. Mm-hmm. Like, you've never had to do a mound visit, right?
I guess not. I'm trying to think if when we were at camp.
you're coaching.
During games, yeah. Yeah, but not really, yeah.
So what I've learned is mound visits, most of the time, when you do a mound visit as a pitching coach or a coach, you're just giving your pitcher an aerobic break. That is it. You are giving them a breather. And so you could walk out there and you just talk about nothing for 30 seconds, especially for my kids when they're 10, right? It's like they are exhausted all the time.
And they don't even have a pitch clock.
They don't even have a pitch clock. They don't need one because they're going, baby.
Because they're
going right away.
They're zooming along. Yeah.
I think back to a moment I had when I was 13 where I was catching a travel ball game and our pitcher, Sam Appleby, wasn't throwing strikes. And our coach came out. Shout out, Sam. Our coach came out. He was this Dominican fellow. And we get to the mound and he just goes, throw strikes. And Sam's like, what? He's like, just throw strikes. And he turned around and went back to the dugout. And I was like, nice.
I remember when I was attending, you know, D3 games at my school, the legendary head coach at the College of Worcester, he would sometimes go out there and not even say anything. He would basically just like do a lap around the mound of intimidation. He's like, look, you know what I'm going to say, which is throw fucking strikes and, you know, get your head out of your ass. Like, I'm just coming out here. I'm going to circle you and make you think about what you've done and you can figure it out on your own.
One more story that has nothing to do with the World Series. When I was pitching in college, myself and another sidearming righty were warming up. Mm-hmm. He was warming up in front of me and our coach signaled to the bullpen for the sidearmer. And I jogged out, right? And he oops. And I got out there and he was like, are you ready to go? And I said, no. And I walked the first batter on four pitches and then he put in the other guy.
Wait, but I thought that was because he brought in the wrong one.
Yeah.
I thought it was because he wanted the other guy originally.
Yeah. Okay. But I was ready, baby. Not really.
But he was too embarrassed to like pull you before you even got. I understand. Okay.
Correct. Two more topics before we take a quick break. Mm-hmm. One is Evan Carter playing in Chase Field. How do you feel about that? Evan Carter, who never swings outside the strike zone, the man who doesn't chase at Chase.
Ooh, interesting. I haven't thought about it in that context. I do know that this will be his, or at least I'm almost positive this will be his Chase Field debut. This is also a place where they had many a high school showcases that Evan Carter was not invited to because he was not a famous high school player. This is good. This is good. Now, I guess the question is, does this make him more likely to chase or less likely to chase?
No, less likely, because when you're at the plate and you look up at the pitcher, it says Chase Field right there. And that, for him, is a reminder not to chase. The real joke is every stadium Nick Castellanos plays in is a Chase Field.
Well, but again, he won't chase, but he will field, to be clear.
Won't chase, will field, yeah.
Okay, because he can't do, like, it's fine if he doesn't chase, great, but he still has to field.
Has to.
That's going to be important. It's not don't chase, yes, do field. That's not what it's called.
I saw someone tweet this. I wish I could give credit, but I legitimately don't remember. That Evan Carter is bordering on Kenneth Parcells' territory from 30 Rock.
Okay.
The country pumpkin character from 30 Rock.
Yes.
Where Evan Carter is just like so down home country cooking.
Oh,
I know. So wide eyed.
Yeah.
It is
although
very
the
funny.
Thing is, like, it's still endearing because he sometimes when you have generational talent, baseball players really young, whatever, like they get to that point and they're not jaded, but like Evan Carter, it's still endearing because he is clearly having so much fun. Like he is very wide eyed, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. But as long as he maintains that, I don't mind it. Cause otherwise, like if he gets to that point and he's like, yeah, of course I'm in the World Series, like that's hard to really get behind.
Corbin Carroll is at work.
Yeah. Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Evan Carter, the way he's moving through the World Series reminds me of taking a first-time New Yorker to Times Square, where they're so wide-eyed and awestruck by the moment in a way that's unspoken that is incredibly endearing to be around.
And he's good enough to get away with it. I mean, he's batting third and he's crushed some balls, right? But it's amazing to watch him, not even just against left-handers where he looks somewhat hopeless, but even when he strikes out against righties and he sees a pitch, because again, he's played 50 major league games, if that, right? Like every game he's seeing something that he's never seen before, let alone batting third in the World Series as a 21-year-old. Like everything about it is so ridiculous. He's good enough to get away with it and to have it worth it for him to be batting third. But then there's moments when he strikes out on a slider he's never seen before, and he like looks up and he's like, oh my God, where am I? And it's like,
that's yeah, crazy.
You're in the World Series.
Johan Rojas with the Phillies, who is trying to learn how to hit baseballs in the biggest moments of his career. Carter does not look as overmatched except mm-hmm. for when he's facing lefties. And so it is, it's like a Doogie Howser type thing. But look at this child phenom.
But also, again, that's the thing. Like Rojas was he was not qualified to begin with to be hitting. Like Evan Carter has earned the opportunity. They're not putting him in there to bat third as a prank. Like yeah. He's one of their best hitters. But sometimes it's like, oh yeah, no, he's 21. That's okay. It happens.
What a prank. Speaking of pranks, Christian Walker is pulling quite an elaborate prank on us all. By yeah. stinking
yeah.
up a storm.
He, you know, I'm sure it's been mentioned, but like, because they won, it was probably a situation where people were more comfortable to go be like, hey, dude, like, hopefully you're in a better mood right now. Like, what the fuck? Why can't you hit at all? And he's like, yeah, like, I feel terrible. Like, I just, like, I don't care about my stats. I just want to be more helpful to my team. And all that is true. He did finally get a hit at the end of game two. But yeah, I mean, he has been a nothing in the fourth spot. And it's one of those questions where it's like, look, Lovello's been consistent, but also willing to make changes. Walker's been such a constant for them over the last few seasons. I would still be surprised if they change it. Not anything dramatic, you know, moving Pham to four, Gurriel, whatever. But at the same time, I mean, it ain't looking good. It really ain't looking good.
So he had a big game in game one against the Brewers, where he had three hits. Since then, he is 5-44 in yeah. 57 plate appearances, 44 at bats. So he is still Christian walking.
That's true.
But the power is gone. It's just one homer, two doubles. He is a slash line of 114, 298, 227.
Yeah.
Hitting fourth.
Yeah. So that's now, again, we saw it last year, right? The Astros won the World Series with Altuve going 1-40 or whatever as the leadoff spot. Like, it's a small enough sample size with everything involved that you can get away with it. However, like, it is every time he comes up, I just do not have confidence. And if that changes at some point, then the Diamondbacks are going to be in a much better position. So, Christian Walker, but hey, if his defense can just be that good, we won't think about it too much.
Yep. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll scroll through the transcripts from some of yesterday's off-day press conferences and laugh at a couple things players and managers said. We'll read one or two of your emails, and then we will bid you adieu.
Hey, everyone. Producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball barbercast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they are all available right now just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. All of the press conferences in the playoffs are transcribed. There is a service that does it. The transcriptions, the text, they're sent. It's all sent to members of the media. So I have in front of me the words from yesterday. And boy, oh boy, baseball people say the darndest things.
I mean, it's just great because when you're in a press conference and the questions are happening around you, sometimes they kind of stand out as unusual, and other times you're just like, yeah, I'm in a press conference. But oftentimes when I read these back during the playoffs, I'm like, wow, what a funny sport we have. And especially when in the World Series, you admittedly have some media there that are not normally there, and thus you are more likely to have some strange questions. Or, for example, sometimes the person transcribing this can't even tell. So you have a situation where, like, I'm looking at the Brandon Font transcript and there's just one chunk where it says was, and then it says indiscernible the first time. So it was blank the first time. And I don't know what the question was. So it's just funny to try and figure that out. But then you have other funny questions here, like, where is home? Where is home? That was after asking him, basically, where were you last year in Reno after your season ended? They're like, what were you doing back home? And then the question is, where is home? I love that.
Where is home?
There's no other way to find it. So you might as well ask.
Who are you? Who are you? What is your deal? My favorite thing from the Brandon Font presser, and this is a turn of phrase I've never heard before and might be incorrect. He was asking about the crowd. At home, the home crowd, people love a home crowd. I think it's huge to come back and have our fans behind our back. Doesn't that sound like conniving to have the fans behind your back?
Behind our back. If he had just said behind us, you wouldn't
have. Or have our back.
Have our back. Interesting. So have our back makes it sound like they are defending against the people who are behind your back. You know what I mean? Like, the people who are coming to get you, your fans will protect you from that.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I like there was a thing in here with Brandon Font about how he doesn't like other sports.
Yeah.
This was interesting. I also love...
Read that. Read it.
Okay. I don't know when did this come up? Does he say where he... Oh, here,
I got
here we
it,
go.
Here.
So he gets asked, well, when last season ends in Reno, do you watch the playoffs in the World Series? Where were you back home at? Brandon Font says, honestly, I don't really even watch sports, to be honest. I think I watched one World Series game last year. I was definitely back at home. That was after the AAA championship. That's when he is asked, where is home? He says, Louisville, Kentucky.
And then there's a follow-up from some intrepid member of the media. A pitching question. Most athletes do like other sports. You like getting away from it. How come you don't like other sports? Which, that's a bad question. I think that's like saying, why don't you like green beans or... You know, you don't like them. That's it. Font responds, I don't really have an answer for that. I love sports. I love all sports. This is my first year of fantasy football, so I just started watching football. I kind of like it.
What a backtracking from Brandon Font here, because he was pressed on it by the rabid media who's trying to paint him as some sports hater. And he's backed into a corner, and Brandon Font says, no, I love sports. I love all sports.
I love him saying, this is my first year of fantasy football, so I just started watching football. This man was peer pressured into some sort of like fantasy league by some teammates. The idea that his first year of playing fantasy football in his life comes at age 25 is remarkable and tells me that he doesn't actually like sports, because
clearly not.
Most dude bros have been roped into a fantasy football league at some point in their lives.
Yeah. Here's another thing. I want to go back to his first answer, because remember, the question was, do you go, like, basically before you were in all the situation, did you watch the playoffs? And did you watch the World Series? And his answer was, I don't really even watch sports, to be honest. Not, I don't even watch baseball. I don't watch sports, which is amazing, because we do. Actually, I've seen the answer a million times, where players get asked, oh, your season ends. Do you watch the playoffs? Do you watch other teams? And a lot of them say, no. I sit on my ass. I hang out with my family. I play golf. I watch, football or UFC or whatever, right? No, I don't watch baseball. I've heard
Yellowstone.
That a million times.
I'm watching Yellowstone reruns.
Exactly. Great. But for him to respond to, did you watch last year's World Series, to I don't watch sports, is, and then to then backtrack and say, no, I love sports. I love sports. I love sports. I'm sorry. I love sports.
Maybe after he throws a no-no tonight, I'll go up to him and be like, let's set the record straight about your sports liking.
Brandon Font is the opposite of the Lonely Island song. We don't like sports, and we don't care who knows.
No, and we care who knows.
Why? Because he's saying, no, I do love sports.
Sorry. Yeah, he cares who knows that he doesn't like sports. He outed himself. Any other things from the FOT presser? Do you want to move on
Again, like, to the point about, oh, where's home? Like, a lot of these situations, like, this is where people are like, who's man? Like, tell me about yourself, Brandon. Now, whereas Max Scherzer, you have the opposite situation because everybody knows Max Scherzer. And so there's a billion different things that people can ask Max Scherzer about, including in this case, hey, you were on the Diamondbacks once. You remember that? There was a point where someone asked him, like, what do you remember about being traded? What were the emotions? I love this answer from Max. I don't think we need to get into emotions of something that happened 15 years ago.
Hell yeah. Shove that stuff down, baby.
He's like, well, because for Scherzer, he's like, you think I'm still thinking about that shit? Like, think about all the things. Think about all the teams. I've changed teams. I've, like, all these different things that have happened to me. The trade from Arizona is not ranking very highly in my brain at this point.
Question. How do you look back on your time playing at Arizona? Answer. This is where I debuted and broke into the league.
Yo, so true.
Very true.
You nailed it.
Oh,
now,
killed
it. Now, as far as actual insight goes.
I have one thing from the Scherzer presser.
Please go ahead. Then I'll do actual insight. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the question. You mentioned two starts you have left under your belt. And then the second question is about the chemistry of the room you guys have created and what that's like. Here we go. As for our clubhouse, we've got a great clubhouse going. Guys just come together, playing at the right time, good personalities all fitting together at the right time. So that's what it takes to win baseball sometimes. It's not the kind of nerd data that's out there. It's how everybody plays as a human. Jordan, what do you think he means by the nerd data?
I just, again, it's like, I do love when, you know, players go out of their way, you know, to be like, actually, all those numbers you spend time trying to figure out are meaningless. It is about how much we enjoy playing cards together before the game.
It is a level of machismo insecurity that professional baseball players have that is so funny. It's like, yo, just so you know, like, we freaking hate numbers, dude.
Like, I know you think you get this more than we do, but it's because we're friends, all right?
Yeah, like, why are we in the World Series? Because we're buds, because we're buddies. It's like,
all those other teams.
The Phillies are eliminated. That's like, that was their whole thing, okay?
No. I don't want to hear that. It's about us, okay? We're the most friends. Okay?
Every team has a special clubhouse, okay? Here's a great press conference thing. Drink every time someone says good group of guys.
Oh, man. Can we have great a group? Can we just come up with a different, not even great group, like, I don't know, like a passionate group of guys. Like, something.
A swell gaggle of dudes.
Can we please, like, if you want to get the point across that you all like each other, I can't say I'm not going to stop you, but we gotta, like, that's another good example of, I don't know if you saw the new Pablo Torre podcast where he, you know, Pablo Torre, you know, finds out where he did a whole thing trying to find out the origin of Let's Go.
Yeah.
I would like to find the first great group of guys.
Yeah.
And what sport did it originate in? Because in theory, like, I would like to know that.
This is an amazing answer to a question. How's the clubhouse? It's not nerdy. Like, we are not dorks concerned with biomechanics and warp and ex-woba. We are rich dudes who play cards and gamble with one another and spend too much money on fantasy football. Okay, we are not. I am not a nerd t-shirt has people asking a question whether or not I'm a nerd, Jordan.
The last bit from Max Scherzer that is actually somewhat valuable information is basically that he says, because he's, again, comes back from the shoulder injury, has some sort of finger issue in his last start that nobody really knew or cared about because it didn't end up mattering because the Rangers scored a million runs and Jordan Montgomery came in relief. Question. Now that you had a couple postseason starts, can you give a percentage of how you're feeling? And then I love that Scherzer says, in terms of what? So,
like, how this is an example where good reporting, how are you? That is, are you okay? Are you healthy? A percentage in terms of what, bro?
He's like, in terms of like my phone battery, like, what percentage are you looking for?
Anyway, a hundo P.
The response from whoever asked it, I guess 100% since you came back. I don't know. That's not really an answer, but Scherzer seems to figure it out at this point. Then Max Scherzer says, I can throw a fastball 100%. Like, it's how many pitches I can make in a start. That's the number we don't have nailed down to 100%. I don't know what my finishing pitch count number is actually going to be. I'm still trying to build back up in that regard. In terms of throwing 100% effort on a pitch, yeah, I can do that. So I do think that that is at least some level of insight for those wondering. His first two starts back in the postseason, he threw 63 pitches against Houston, 44 pitches against Houston again. So that's the thing. And as we preview this game, what are we expecting from him? It can't be that many pitches, even if whether he's good or he's bad. And so that is certainly going to be something to watch tonight. How do they bridge it from him to whoever else in the late innings, I think will be interesting. So anyway, I enjoyed those press conference briefings, as we'll call it.
I have one more quick one from Torrey Lovello's press conference.
Yep.
He was asked about Christian Walker's defense at first base.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, his glove is made of gold, right? And he's going to be strongly considered for another one this year. But that came with a price. There's a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and some freckles that he's left on the field to prep for those moments. Freckles? Blood? I've heard blood, sweat, and tears more times than I can count. But he said he left some blood, sweat, tears, and freckles on the field. I've never heard this before. Is the implication that he was just grinding so hard that the freckles fell off of his face?
Or like, you know, sometimes people have freckles kind of pop up when they're out in the sun for a really long time. Oh. And so maybe it's like now he has freckles because of how often he's been standing outside there cooking while he's working on his first base defense.
He plays in his dome.
This is so weird. You have to ask. How is there no follow-up to this?
He plays it with a, you know, under a roof. The sun's not hitting him.
Also, let's harp on the blood, sweat, and tears thing for a second. Because when people say that, like in football, I'm like, yeah. You know, what is the biggest, this is a kind of a fucked up conversation, but that's what this podcast is going to be today. When blood, sweat, I know there's tears, maybe, right? Sweat makes sense. What
sweat,
is the
well,
biggest?
Sweat, yeah. Like, hopefully.
But blood, where is blood? Like when you're I think sometimes like if you're batting without batting gloves, of taking 5 million swings, your hands might get a little bleed. But like for first base defense, where's the blood? I guess diving and scraping your elbow. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, diving, scraping your elbow, get a little raspberry, you know, jamming a finger. Here is a take on blood, sweat, and tears. When you're talking about first base defense, the likeliest of those three liquids is sweat by a mile. Second is blood, and third is tears. If you are crying, if you are weeping over improving your footwork around the bag, like, look, I have been a proponent for men crying more in baseball. There should be crying in baseball. However, when that comes to improving first base defense, I'm going sweat, blood, tears in that order.
I agree. I do think that sweat is just so far ahead of blood and tears.
Not even close.
In whenever this phrase is used, it's like so far ahead that it's like the fact that it's even listed second is always kind of goofy to me.
The only baseball moment that truly warranted blood, sweat, and tears was when Trevor Bauer cut his finger with a drone, went out onto the mound in the ALCS, bled everywhere, sucked, and then caused Guardians fans to cry.
That's a good one. I was going to say Matt Holliday face planting on the slide, because that's one where we definitely had blood and then probably again tears on the other side, sweat, you know, around it. But I like that one. That's good. That's the only I will accept that. I still think sweat needs to be listed first. I guess that's my main takeaway.
There were a lot of sweat left out there.
Let's do one email before we say goodbye, Jake. This email is from Eric. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Eric says, hi, Jake and Jordan. One of my favorite aspects of the World Series is championship rings going to players who weren't on the postseason roster. In some cases, this means players who contributed in small ways during the regular season, but it can also mean players who actively hurt the winning team's chances before they were dealt or sent down. Obviously, Mad Bum getting his fourth ring if the Diamondbacks win is hilarious, but I'm wondering if there are any others you'd be excited about. As a Mariners fan, I'd be thrilled for Kyle Lewis and Josh Rojas to get their rings. But if the Rangers win, I'd also be thinking about someone like Cole Reagans. Just curious if there are any names that come to mind for you two and why. Love the pod, Eric. Now, this is obviously something very easy top podcast topic. You look up, oh, who was on this team that we don't forget. But it never gets old, truly. And I think about too, like as he's sort of alluding to, like the emotions of these players getting these rings potentially. I know it's slightly different in every organization. Sometimes it is if you have literally received one plate appearance or thrown one pitch, you will get a ring. Others, I think it's different. But either way, let's go under the premise that anyone who participated will get a ring.
Madison Bumgarner, we do just need to really revisit. Four starts, 16 innings, 19 runs, 10.26 ERA. He was horrible. He was abysmal. He lost them four starts, and then he was gone. I am curious if he has watched any of this Diamondbacks run. I'm curious if he's communicating with anybody on the team. I am curious if he will get a ring if they win.
Because the only reporting we've gotten is that he's communicated with Bochy, not with the D-backs. So, I mean, I would imagine he was friends with some of the Diamondbacks pitchers. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if he got along great with Merrill Kelly, you know, and Zach Gallen and stuff like that, right? Maybe Kevin Ginkle, you know. But, again, are we staying in touch? Tough to say.
D-backs, I am laughing about getting a ring. Buddy Kennedy. Who is Buddy Kennedy? Buddy Kennedy is notable because he was drafted in the fifth round out of Millville Senior High School. Mike Trout went to Millville. Mike Trout were number one. And every year he returns to Millville High School to pass out the number one jersey to the captain of the Millville Mills.
The Thunderbolts.
The Thunderbolts. He gives out the number one jersey. And one year, it was to Buddy Kennedy. And Buddy Kennedy became a big leaguer. And the idea that Buddy Kennedy will get a ring before Mike Trout, like since Mike Trout played a playoff game, okay? Mike Trout last played a playoff game in 2014 when Buddy Kennedy was a sophomore in high school. Okay? Yeah. And since then, Buddy Kennedy has grown up, been drafted in the fifth round, developed by the Diamondbacks, made the big leagues, and I believe is now on a different team.
He has been, in the last 2 months, claimed off waivers by Oakland, and then, like, yesterday was claimed off waivers by the Cardinals. Like, this, he was just on MLB trade rumors, like, 2 days ago. So, Buddy Kennedy, and the other weirdest thing about Buddy Kennedy, kind of looks like Mike Trout. Just one of the strangest things. He's got the Trout neck, everything about kind of the shape of his head. It's like, well, how could this person look this much like Mike Trout, the one other Millville big leaguer? But sure enough. So that's a good one. Anyway, Buddy Kennedy had 29 plate appearances this year. For Arizona, that's a good one. We've mentioned Nick Ahmed on here. Again, a guy who'd been with the D-backs forever, ultimately DFA'd when his 560 OPS was not good enough. That's one where, hell yeah, he should get a ring. He should be the first one. He should get a ring before any of these guys on the Diamondbacks, because this guy has seen it all, and now his career might be over.
Nabil Crismat. Merry Crismat.
Nabil Crismat currently pitching in the Dominican Winter League, watching in between his starts with Lise to see if he will get a ring for his two innings with the Diamondbacks earlier this season, which is really amazing. A good way to describe Nabil Crismat, he had fewer pitching appearances than both Jose Herrera and Josh Rojas and Carson Kelly. So that's three position players that pitched more than Nabil Crismat. But hey, maybe he'll get it. We'll see.
Sebi Zavala played for this team this year. I did not know that.
I believe he's actually I think he might be with the squad. I think he might be taxi squatting. What about Texas? Let's run through a couple of Texas guys. I mean, there are a lot of randos on the D-backs, but the Rangers, because of their season, like DeGrom is the first one, of course. If this is how DeGrom's getting a ring, and I've made the point, like they went 6-0 in his starts, you know, so like that's not nothing. He was pretty awesome during his 6 starts, so he certainly deserves it.
There are not a lot of other guys. Again, I said Ian Kennedy earlier. He threw 16 innings. He's 38. There is a gentleman whose name I did not recognize when I walked into their clubhouse yesterday. A person who I had just never heard these two words together. Jake Latz, L-A-T-Z. I usually know all the Jakes. You know, we're in a group chat. I walked in to the clubhouse and it was like, there's DeGrom's locker. There's Scherzer's locker. There's Jake Latz's locker. It's like Jake Latz.
But he's around. So he's on the 40. He is on the 40 man. So that is an achievement. He's like Andrew Salfrank, 0 ERA in his 6 innings of major league work this year. So, but does not I guess he pitched. Wow, apparently he pitched in 2021 with the Rangers. That talk about no recollection of that. That's for sure. That was only one game. But Jake Latz, that's a good one. I'm sure people will be really excited about him.
What about Alex Spies?
See, Alex Spies is a good one because his story is wild. I mean, he was a top draft pick, retired, came back this year throwing 99 after basically becoming a high school coach and then made the big leagues as a reliever. Command wasn't really there to help them out down the stretch, but that's one I would certainly be happy for. And then just to mention, the emailer, you know, mentioning Cole Reagans, you know, Cole Reagans, who is now just an ace with Kansas City, and he pitched in 17 games and had a 6 ERA before he was traded for Aroldis Chapman. And it's weird, though, because it's like it would make more sense if Aroldis Chapman was any good, but instead he's like watching him almost, you know, derail the Rangers' hopes at a World Series. But I'll be happy for Cole Reagans because might as well happen now. Who knows what would happen with the Royals.
That's it. All right, Jake. Podcast over.
Podcast over. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this episode. We went in some interesting directions here. This was a fun one. I hope you all enjoyed it. Enjoy game 3. We will be back recording likely late after game 3. You can hear our game 3 recap on Tuesday morning. But until then, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jake Mintz. And we'll talk to you all soon.
Blood, sweat, tears.
SiriusXM Podcasts.